For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
It's my great pleasure this evening to introduce my friend, Preston Cato Hauser. Preston and I became good friends when I lived in Japan from 1990 to 92. Preston knows quite a lot about Japanese culture, or has experienced quite a lot of Japanese culture from living there for 40 years and traveling around Asia as well. Preston happens to be a scholar of Elizabethan literature and Shakespeare and Christopher Marlowe, and happens to be here in the States because of another great literary figure. We just came from Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we had a deep immersion for 4 days in a wonderful event celebrating a great American literary figure, Bob Dylan. So that was so we're kind of steeped in that event. But Preston is also a master of shakuhachi, which is the Japanese flute and part of the Zen tradition, and or related to the Zen tradition. So Preston will speak tonight about shakuhachi and its place in Buddhism and Zen, and will perform for us. So thank you very much for coming and being with us tonight, Preston.
It's my pleasure. Dan and I go back a long way. Longer than we like to admit, maybe. I played the shakuhachi, which is part of the Fukeshu sect. You may have seen the image of the komuso with the baskets on their heads and wandering monks. It's kind of a sordid history because in the Tokugawa era, the monks did in fact exist, but as the samurais were losing their masters and their swords along with them, many of them took up the flute. And they, you know, really weren't much more than thugs and spies, and it kind of, the sect kind of fell apart. And then when they wanted legitimacy, they had to apply for it with the Meiji Restoration, and were denied because of this history. And this music was not allowed to be played for any religious reasons, but only secular purposes, which we generally ignored. I'm going to start with a piece that's the komuso usually begin with. I'm associated with Myo-an-ji, which is the last komuso temple in Kyoto. And when we have our recitals or we go on our begging or we're playing at a temple or something, we usually start with this piece, which is Choshi, which just means centering. And it's a way for me to kind of bring the flute and me, myself, into line. It's a very short piece, but we always start this way. The handouts are there, and in the handouts, especially the essay in the middle, I've just tried to answer a lot of the basic questions. And I'm going to play this piece, and if you want to read or take a snooze or draw a picture or write a poem, it's all okay. I will not be distracted. This is the standard flute. It's a hasun. Shakuhachi just means of length. This is a nishakuisun, which is longer and the tone is deeper and maybe more conducive to this evening.
Woo!
Tonight I thought I would start by playing the three classic pieces of the Komuso, or the Zen repertoire, which we call the Koten Honkyoku. These are the original pieces. And the first one is Kyore, which is often translated as the empty bell. It's an unusual image. But we can look at the bell or the gong, and even though we can't hear anything, or it's not struck, or we can't hear anything, doesn't mean the sound is not there. It's still there, even before and after we strike it. And of course, it's a metaphor for us. We are like bells that, even though we're not making a sound, doesn't mean the sound is not in there. So the empty bell is the name of this piece, and it also relates back to Chikuzenji and Hupukwa, who was a contemporary of Rinzai, and he figures into a few cases in the Blue Cliff record where Rinzai would ask him a question and he would either not answer or run away. And I think in one of the cases he asks for a coffin, goes, he's going to die, and they prepare a coffin and he doesn't die. And he says, well, tomorrow I will. And he doesn't die the next day. And it's kind of like Cry Wolf. And the third day, no one comes to see him and he crawls in and passes away. So that's Pukwa. And Chikuzenji is his disciple, and whenever he was asked a question, he would simply ring a bell, and that would be his answer. Much like Kasyapa receiving the flower from Sakyamuni as a transmission, not in the words, but ringing the bell. And this is Kyore, which is the empty bell.
Thank you.
the Komoso practice what is called Sui Zen. And Sui is Chinese reading for Fuku, which means to blow. So this is a blowing Zen. And the Shakuhachi are considered a meditative instrument, or an instrument that aids in meditation. And the expression that we have is Ichion Jobutsu, which means one tone. Within one tone, one can realize their Buddha nature or Buddhahood. And I've never quite figured out, is that the tone that I make or the tone that I hear? And it sounds funny, but my experience of playing this is necessarily going to be different than yours. And the reason is that I have two sources of listening: the sound that comes out and re-enters my ear, but also the sound that is resonating, you know, through my body or my bones. This is why our voices often sound strange when we hear them played back on a tape recording, because we're hearing only one source there. Playing the Shakuhachi also is a little exercise in listening. As I'm playing, instead of counting beats, there are no beats, there's no time signature here. The song is determined by breath, or each exhalation that I'm playing. Likewise, you're listening, you can imagine each exhalation, each breath, as a stroke of ink on the sumi-e, ink like that. As if you were dipping into the ink and making one stroke. And that would be equivalent to like one breath. And that's one way of listening. Another way of listening would be when I'm playing well, we say we're playing mushin, which means heartless or mindless or without purpose. And that's another way to listen, as if you were watching clouds going by. Clouds go by and they have no purpose. Waves coming into the shore, for example, are purposeless or mindless or senseless. And English is really not a good target language for these ideas. I might suggest that if you have a word, for example, like care, to care, when it's positive, we would say, well, I'm being careful. And when I'm not so good, I'm being careless. But when both are irrelevant, or when we surpass both careful and careless, we can say that I'm carefree. Well, we can apply that to something like mind. If I am paying attention, I am mindful. And when I'm not paying attention, I'm mindless. But when I'm really doing well, I'm mind-free. But our language really doesn't allow us to do this very well. But that's kind of what's at work here. And we can use that rubric or that template for anything. Fear. Well, I'm fearful. Or I'm fearless. Really, what I want to be is fear-free. Or power. You know, the possibilities are endless. But I would suggest carefree as a model for how to listen to this music. The next piece is Koku, and the characters for this is empty sky. So this would be, often this is on recordings as a bell ringing in the empty sky, which is a little much. Empty sky is enough, I think. In Japanese, in Chinese for that matter, sky, sora, koku, is not emptiness per se. And again, English doesn't serve us very well here, because we often think of sky as some kind of distance between here and there, or here in the moon, or here in the wall, or something. And it's not something that's measured necessarily. Chinese would say that sky would be synonymous with mind, and that mind and heart, or kokoro, sora and kokoro, are synonymous, they're the same thing. So as I'm playing the empty sky, you might consider the empty heart, or heart-free. I kind of prefer that, as opposed to heart-full or heartless. This is Koku. I'm going to change to a shorter flute, which has a little brighter tone to it.
Thank you. We were passing Wrigley Field, and the Cubs had won, and the people, this might be a good time for a seventh inning stretch. We kind of stand there and stretch our legs a little bit.
Yeah, we, on the way over here, we passed all the crowd coming out of Wrigley Field, so Preston suggests a seventh inning stretch. Let's do that.
And this would be time to take questions if there's.
And if people have any questions or comments or responses, discussion.
Is this a time?
Sure.
Yeah.
Any time is fine.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about the history and in the days. I don't know what the status of the Fukushu is now, but in the days before the Free Press, were people's musical training and Zen training one and the same?
Yeah, we
would they be interacting with the same teacher for both of those?
Not a teacher necessarily. Each temple had a single piece, one piece that was associated with it. Oh. And the Komuso would travel like a monk who's on the road for. A lot of monks were not sitting around. They were going from temple to temple and testing their practice. Each temple had a single song. It wasn't until around 1900, late 19th century, my teacher's father's teacher was Jin Yodo, and he went to the different temples and assembled these pieces into the repertoire we have today. I feel honored that I'm in that line of the Jin Yodo who went and collected these. But before that, each temple had a single piece. And this could be a kind of class order, that if you have come from a teacher, you would stand outside the gate and play the piece from the other temple. And the pieces are coded. And I'm afraid I cannot reveal the code at this time. But they're there.
So everybody who was at one temple would play just that one song.
Right.
But people, if you wander from temple to temple, you would learn several songs.
Right. And there's a lot of overlap in the phrasing of each piece because the temple and the teaching all overlaps as well.
And when these people were being itinerant, did they have what we think of as a typical sort of Zen teacher-student kinds of relationships, or were they looser than that?
Both.
Okay.
In the Tokugawa era, what the monks wanted were the three treasures, and what this was. Your general ID, your identification, your seal for your training, which was associated with the temple. But the third one was your travel permit, because in Tokugawa, you couldn't go from one prefecture to another unless you had this little passport. And if you were an itinerant monk, you had this, and you could travel from prefecture to prefecture, or basho going to the north, etc. Well, when samurai were losing their swords and were taking this up as basically a weapon, they, of course, wanted the three treasures so they could travel along the Tokaido Road or up to Vancouver. And a lot of spying going on, eavesdropping, that kind of unsavory stuff is, unfortunately or for better or worse, associated with the sect. We don't try very hard to dispute those things, I'm afraid. Because it's just part of the territory.
Questions?
Getting used to the room. This is good. And the tones that are resonating. As you move along, the tradition that I'm receiving slowly, it's meditative of course, but it starts to approach shamanism in a very natural kind of way, not in an esoteric it's not that, but it's approaching that. So I'm as I'm playing, I'm also listening to what I'm doing, of course, but I'm also listening to how the room is, and where I'm sitting in it, and where you are. And I know this sounds funny, but in art, you know, I can look at you and I can see you seeing. And that's where the train, that's where the heart is. So I'm listening to it, but I'm hearing you here. And it doesn't sound very mystical, but it's there. And,
well, how did you become connected with the Shakyamuni in this tradition, this really unique musical literature? It was challenging.
I was a lit major, but also Asian studies, so... In college in their 70s, studying Chinese. China was the place to go, but you couldn't go. So I was studying Chinese, arts, music, Buddhism, languages. And these things just, how do you bring music and Buddhism and languages together? And it's just started ricocheting. Just, the path just presented itself. And I graduated from Monterey Institute in Japanese. And it just fell into place. And it just lined up in ways I couldn't foresee. So there wasn't a lot of determination there. It was more of a response. It just was responding to what was in front of me. But the reason we have the baskets on our heads, the monks have, even so I think there's some illustrations there of the basket, is a, not denial, but you don't want personality to come into the foreground here. You want the tone and eventually, as with all most Asian arts, you want to bring yourself or your mind or your understanding into the foreground. This is different than the Western art where, you know, it's captured and framed and caged and it's in the... In Asian arts is different. The artist comes to a certain point, 70% say of the art or the design, and the beholder is expected to take over and bring it to, not completion, but to bring it along. So you become into the foreground. A couple weeks ago, I was at Ryoanji Temple, the rock garden there. And it's really, the rock garden is really about the beholder. And yes, you're looking at it. Yes, you can see tigers and mountaintops and sand waves and this kind of thing. But you're really looking in the mirror here. In Sanskrit, that would be tatamasi, which is thus thou art. So when you're looking at that garden, you're seeing mind, capital M here. Hence the basket. So you shouldn't be paying any attention to it. And oftentimes when I've been performing, I've often wished I had that basket on.
I'm really curious about the notation. Is it, I can't see it from here. Is it specific to this instrument?
This is written by the priests, but there's other notation. I think I can pass some of this around here. This is the notation. I can pass this around. This is Sugimori. It's read top to bottom, left to right. There's no time sequences, but the sense of rhythm, such as it is like a pendulum. So I'm kind of following the rhythm down like this, but it's not 4-4 or anything like that.
And is that specific to this instrument?
Yes.
Wow. And how old was that? When was that developed?
These pieces I'm playing tonight are 300 years old. They're contemporaneous with Bach. As legend would have it. Japanese history, you really can't verify much of anything before 1868, Meiji Restoration, unless it burned down this year, or we had an earthquake on this year. But everything else that's human-related, it's going to be infused with legend. This is a modern piece. The notation would be like that. I think I have another section of a more modern piece. You know, this would be set with a 4/4 time. And this is a Tozan Ryu. I'm in the Kinko Ryu, which is the more traditional sect of the musicianship. This is more modern. In fact, I can give you an example. I'll just play this because it's short. And this is Koga Arashi, and it's by Tozan, Nakao Tozan. And he wrote this in 1946 after the war, and he was in Tokyo. And he was looking over what was left of Tokyo, which wasn't much. That's a rather unfortunate effect of the war. Hiroshima and Nagasaki get most of the attention, but it was really the firebombing in March of that year which was devastating. In one or two nights, 50 square miles burnt to the ground, and the 500,000 people who were in it. 50 square miles burnt in one night. Just to give you a sense of perspective, San Francisco is 42 square miles. So he's there, and he's looking over the what's left of the landscape, and it's not encouraging, and he composes this piece. And again, this is very modern. This is 20th century, 200 years after the two I just played. Thank you. 10 more.
Yeah.
You know, when we're starting out meditating, sometimes, this is interminable. When is this going to end? And then later, it's already. Well, the last piece, I promised myself I'd play the three main. So this is Mukaiji, and I think there's an explanation of the origin of Mukaiji. And it's very legendary, and you know, he hears the song, Chiku Senji hears the song in a dream. Did I really hear that? Sounds like Paul McCartney talking about writing yesterday. He swore he heard it from somewhere else and came to him in a dream. That's how sometimes it comes to us. So this is Mukaiji, the mist, the sea mist.
Thank you.
say. So piercing. Yeah. Powerful.
Another way to listen to this music. Maybe I can play one more short one. Just a
sure.
In Asian arts, Japanese arts in particular, in, for example, calligraphy, you're writing the calligraphy here, or flower arrangement, ikebana. And, you know, you're looking at the ikebana, and yes, the flowers are in the foreground, or the kanji, or the enso is in the foreground. But the what we're looking for in the artist's work is how they're massaging or how they're kneading or shaping the space around the flowers. So yes, we see a triangular shape or we see the wave, but we can also look at, we can bring the background into the foreground. Well, in this music when I'm playing, watch or listen to how I'm massaging the silence between the notes. And it's like negative space. We're kind of bringing that negative space into the foreground. And that's part of the aesthetic that's at work here. Let's see if I can find a short one that's kind of...
I'm reminded of this, something in Suzuki Roshi, where he talks about zazen, and it's like you're at the movies, but you're watching the screen. You're not watching the zazen, you know?
I'll just play another one. This is Io Lembo, which is a Komoso piece, and it's quite short. So, but it'll illustrate a way of listening.
Thank you so much for coming all the way from Japan and sharing this.